You know how it feels to test drive a high-end sports car on like an empty, perfectly paved track?
Oh, yeah. It's an amazing feeling.
Right. It handles flawlessly. The acceleration is just seamless. And I mean, that's exactly what an AI Pilot demo feels like.
Pure speed and precision.
Exactly. It's pure magic. But then you take that exact same car and deploy it into, say, Midtown Manhattan traffic at rush hour.
Yeah, that's a completely different story.
Suddenly, that top speed is completely irrelevant. You're boxed in by unpredictable drivers, and well, the whole system just grinds to a halt.
I mean, that captures the reality of the enterprise AI transition perfectly,
Yeah.
for sure. The impressive capabilities of, a control AI pilot, they just simply do not survive contact with a complex real-world corporate environment.
They really don't.
Not unless the underlying architecture fundamentally changes.
And that is the core of what we are exploring in today's deep dive. We're looking at a May 2026 white paper. It's titled The Agentic Enterprise Playbook: Reliability at Scale.
From an AI project management practice.
Yeah, exactly. And it tackles this incredibly frustrating modern reality head on. Because, I mean, why is it that when you deploy these mind-blowing AI demos inside a massive, highly regulated corporation, they suddenly become painfully slow?
And totally unreliable.
Right. And honestly, just prone to making things up.
It really is the defining challenge for enterprise buyers right now.
So, what's the actual mission of this playbook?
The mission is to decode what it calls the twin risks of enterprise AI.
The twin risks.
Yeah, those two risks are latency, meaning, the system is just too slow for practical use and hallucination.
Which means it's confidently delivering false information.
Exactly. So our goal today is to uncover the playbook for building AI agents that can actually be trusted to act on a company's behalf in these high-stakes environments.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we can figure out how to fix these twin risks, we kind of have to understand why the systems companies are building right now are, well, structurally different.
Fundamentally different, yeah.
Different from the AI interfaces we were all playing with even just a couple of years ago, the playbook makes a really hard distinction between a standard chatbot and an agentic system.
It does. It argues that agents are vastly more fragile.
Which sounds backward, right? You'd think the newer thing is stronger.
You would think so, but to understand why, we really have to look at the underlying mechanics.
Walk us through it.
Sure. So a standard chatbot operates on what we call a thin loop.
A thin loop, okay.
Right. You provide one prompt, the model processes it, and it generates one answer. The surface area for something to go wrong there is honestly incredibly small.
Because it's just one step.
Exactly. The latency you experience is literally just the time it takes the model to generate that single response. And the accuracy is entirely dependent on that single turn.
It's essentially like asking, I don't know, a brilliant hermit a single question.
A hermit.
Yeah, like the hermit is sitting in a cave, you ask a question, they think for a second, and they give you an answer. It's a direct one-on-one interaction.
That's a good way to put it. But an agentic system isn't a hermit.
Right. An agent is more like hiring a project manager.
That's a highly accurate way to frame it. An agent operates on an execution loop, not a thin loop.
So if you ask this AI project manager a complex question, instead of just answering off the top of its head, it has to like draft a plan.
Right. It plans first.
Then it has to execute that plan by sending emails to five different departments, which, in AI terms means calling external tools or querying internal company databases.
Which takes time.
Tons of time. Then it has to wait for all those departments to reply, read their responses, maybe realize two of the databases returned errors, re-query them, and finally synthesize all of that raw data into a single coherent answer for you.
It's a massive amount of work behind the scenes.
Yeah. So behind your one simple request, there might be 10 to 50 hidden model calls and pool executions happening. The surface area for failure isn't just bigger, it's like exponential.
What's fascinating here is how the math of failure works in these multi-step
Well,
systems.
the math is brutal.
It is completely unforgiving. Let's look at latency first. Latency in an agentic system compounds additively.
Meaning it just stacks up.
Exactly. If your agent decides its plan requires five steps, and each of those tool calls takes 3 seconds to resolve, you are waiting a minimum of 15 seconds.
And that's if everything goes perfectly.
Right. If the agent hits a snag and decides it needs 7 steps, now you're waiting 21 seconds.
Which feels like an absolute eternity when you're just staring at a loading screen.
Oh, it really does. But, the accuracy math is much more punishing.
Because it doesn't compound additively.
Exactly. Accuracy compounds multiplicatively.
Okay, explain that for us.
Let's say you have a five-step chain, right? And your underlying language model is 95% accurate at executing each individual step.
25% sounds great. An A.
In isolation, a 95% success rate sounds fantastic. But because those steps are chained together, meaning step three entirely relies on the output of step two, you have to multiply those probabilities.
Oh, right. Because any failure breaks the chain.
Precisely. 0.95 to the fifth power is roughly 77%.
77%? Wow. When you put it like that, it makes you realize why so many pilot programs just never make it to production. I mean, a C-plus grade doesn't cut it in a regulated enterprise.
And that 77% assumes the errors are independent, which they almost never are.
What do you mean?
Well, if the agent grabs the wrong piece of data in step one, it doesn't matter how flawless the reasoning is in steps two through five.
Oh, because it's working with bad data.
Right. Every subsequent step is poisoned by that initial bad data.
So the big takeaway for you listening right now is that every single hop, every micro step, every tool call, every database query you allow your AI agent to take is a direct tax.
A heavy tax.
Yeah, a direct tax on both the speed of the system and the ultimate truth of the answer.
Which brings us to how organizations are forced to deal with that tax.
Right, because they have to fix it.
They do. The playbook dedicates a massive portion to what it calls taming the clock.
Because of the latency issue.
Exactly. Because every hop is a tax on speed. Businesses have to be incredibly rigorous about how they track latency. But there's a glaring discrepancy between the latency numbers that engineering teams report to their leadership and the actual experience of the end users.
Yeah, I noticed the playbook mentions a gap between those two realities. Ooh. What's causing that disconnect? I mean, is it just a difference in how they measure time?
It's a difference in which metric they choose to highlight. Engineering teams naturally tend to report the median response time, or the P50.
The P50, okay.
Let's say the median response time of an agent is 4 seconds. That means half the time it's faster, half the time it's slower.
4 seconds sounds perfectly acceptable on paper.
It does. But enterprise users do not experience the median.
They experience the worst case scenario.
Exactly. If an employee is sitting on a live call with a frustrated client or they're trying to close a high priority support ticket, they acutely feel that worst case delay.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you've ever felt yourself getting actively angry at an AI spinner on your screen, you are experiencing exactly this.
Totally.
You don't care that the system was fast yesterday. You care that it's slow right now when you actually need it.
That human psychology is exactly why engineers have to track something called the P99.
The 99th percentile latency.
Right. A system with a perfectly acceptable 4-second median might have a 30-second P99.
30 seconds.
Yeah. That means one out of every 100 queries takes half a minute to resolve. And if that tail latency isn't aggressively managed, users will completely abandon the system.
Regardless of how good the median looks on a dashboard.
Exactly.
So how are the successful teams actually fixing this? The playbook lists a few mitigations. The big one goes back to what we just talked about, hop reduction.
Hop reduction is crucial.
Right. If your agent is autonomously making 10 micro steps to solve a problem, developers have to intervene and compress that into 3 or 4 steps.
By writing tighter, more capable system prompts.
And it also mentions model routing, which is essentially, not using your massive, expensive, slow frontier model for every tiny subtask.
Yeah, it's overkill.
Right. If the agent just needs to extract a date from a text block, route that specific task to a smaller, lightning-fast model.
Parallel tool execution is another critical strategy here.
Doing things at the same time.
Precisely.
Yeah.
If the agent realizes it needs to check an inventory database, a shipping database, and a CRM, it shouldn't check them sequentially.
One after the other.
Right. It should fire off all 3 queries simultaneously and synthesize whichever comes back first.
But wait, I'm looking at consumer AI apps right now, and almost all of them just stream the text token by token.
They do, yeah.
The second you hit enter, it starts typing the answer immediately. It feels way faster to the user, even if the total time to finish the paragraph is exactly the same. So why wouldn't an enterprise just do that to solve the perceived latency problem?
Streaming is incredibly popular, I'll give you that.
Mm-mm.
But the playbook explicitly cautions against relying on it as a universal solution for enterprise agents.
Really? Why?
Because streaming is fundamentally a user experience trick. And in a high-stakes environment, it comes with a massive hidden cost.
Which is?
It makes automated validation almost impossible.
Wait, why does seeing the text appear word by word break validation?
Think about the safety architecture. In a regulated enterprise, you usually want a safety layer, often a separate verifier model, to check the agent's final answer.
To make sure it isn't hallucinating.
Right, or leaking personally identifiable information. That verifier needs to see the complete thought before it can approve or reject it.
Oh, I see.
If you are actively streaming the text directly to the user's screen as it's being generated, you can't easily intercept and block a problematic sentence.
Because the words are already on the screen.
Exactly.
By the time the safety model realizes the AI just hallucinated a company policy, the user has already read it and internalized it.
Precisely. You sacrifice safety for the illusion of speed. Furthermore, streaming creates highly disjointed user experiences in multi-step agentic systems.
How so?
Well, if the agent starts screaming an answer, but then realizes halfway through that it needs to pause and read a 50-page PDF to finish its thought, the streaming just abruptly stops.
Oh, man. So the cursor just blinks indefinitely while the agent grinds away in the background.
Exactly. To the user, it looks like the application has just crashed.
That is terrible UX.
It is. Huh? The takeaway here is that latency budgets must be treated as strict contractual requirements per use case. You really have to engineer the system to handle that P99 worst case scenario from day one.
Okay, so assuming we implement all of that, we aggressively reduce the hops, we route our models efficiently, and we get the latency down to a fraction of a second.
Right.
How do we ensure the agent isn't just delivering terrible fabricated information at lightning speed?
Which brings us perfectly to the second twin risk, hallucination. And to address this, the playbook insists we have to shift our vocabulary. We tend to treat hallucination like a single disease, but it's actually a broad category of distinct failures.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The playbook breaks this down brilliantly.
It does.
It's not just the AI inventing fake facts out of thin air, what they call fabrication. It includes a whole spectrum of errors, like misgrounding.
Right. Misgrounding is a huge one.
That's where the real data is sitting, right there in the source document. But the AI misreads it or attributes a quote to the wrong person. Or specification drift.
Specification drift is a massive headache for software developers.
I can imagine.
That is when the model provides factually correct information, but completely ignores the formatting constraints it was given.
Right. Imagine asking the AI for a perfectly structured JSON file, which is a strict machine-readable format that your backend database actually needs to ingest, and the AI instead gives you this beautifully written poetic paragraph containing the data.
Exactly.
The facts are right, but the format completely breaks your entire software pipeline.
It's useless.
Yeah. And then there is my personal favorite, sycophancy.
Oh, sycophancy is uniquely dangerous in an enterprise setting.
It really is.
That occurs when the model prioritizes agreeing with the user over being factually correct.
Right.
If an executive asks an AI agent, "Why did our customer retention drop 20% last quarter?" and the retention actually went up, a sycophantic model might invent a complex, believable reason for a non-existent drop.
Just to validate the executive's flawed premise.
Exactly. Just to tell them they're right.
It just wants to please you so badly, it's willing to lie.
It is.
And the reason these models do this stems from what the playbook calls the fluency trap.
The fluency trap, yes.
Large language models are fundamentally optimized to sound plausible. At their core, they are next token prediction engines trained to sound natural to a human ear.
Right.
So when they hit a gap in their knowledge, they don't stutter or pause or look confused like a human would. They fill the gap with absolute unshakable confidence.
In a confidently delivered wrong answer is infinitely more destructive to a business than a system that simply crashes and throws an error code.
Which leads to a metric that, honestly, completely changed how I think about these systems.
Oh, for sure.
The playbook argues that the ultimate metric for an AI agent isn't actually its overall accuracy. It is a metric called refusal recall.
Refusal recall is the true measure of reliability.
Tell us about that.
It measures the system's willingness to explicitly say, "I don't know," or "I don't have enough internal data to answer that," when it genuinely lacks the information.
There is a specific detail in the white paper that is incredibly counterintuitive but makes perfect sense once you hear it.
The 87% stat.
Yes. It states that a system with 87% accuracy and 90% refusal recall is a highly valuable, shippable product.
Absolutely.
But a system with 95% accuracy and only 10% refusal recall is a massive corporate liability.
It's a disaster waiting to happen.
You would literally rather have an AI that is mathematically less accurate overall, as long as it has the self-awareness to keep its mouth shut when it's unsure.
Because that 87% accurate system is predictable.
Right.
When it hits the boundaries of its knowledge, it refuses to guess, which allows the software to gracefully route that specific query to a human employee.
It hands it off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The 95% accurate system might be right more often, but when it is wrong, it fabricates wildly and confidently.
And people believe it.
Yeah. In a heavily regulated industry like banking or healthcare, that unpredictable 5% error rate will cost you millions in compliance fines.
Okay, so if the goal is to get the AI to admit when it doesn't know something, how do we actually build that? It sounds like we can't just fix the AI model itself.
Yes, we can't.
We have to look at the data we're feeding it.
Exactly. To get reliable answers out, you have to exert absolute control over what goes in. The playbook introduces the discipline of context engineering.
Context engineering.
It argues that prompts are no longer creative writing exercises. They are foundational code.
You can't just have developers copying and pasting prompts from a Slack channel anymore.
No, definitely not.
They need version control, peer review, and testing, just like any other software application. The playbook talks about the danger of context rot.
Context rot is a huge issue.
Yeah, you build this beautiful, perfectly tuned prompt in the lab. It works flawlessly against 5 clean test documents, but then you deploy it to the real world and it gets hit with dirty, unstructured, chaotic legacy data.
And the whole system falls apart.
Exactly.
The context rots because the real world is messy. But context engineering is only half the battle.
What's the other half?
The other half is how you store and retrieve your actual business data to feed the agent. This is where retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, comes in.
Right, RAG. The idea that an AI basically needs a search engine attached to it.
Precisely. You take all your company's proprietary documents, chunk them into smaller pieces, and convert those pieces into mathematical vectors using an embedding model.
Okay, vectors.
These vectors are then stored in an index. When the agent needs a fact to answer a question, it searches that index. The crucial point here is that an agent's intelligence is strictly capped by the quality of its index.
Now, I've heard the term mathematical vectors a lot, but how does turning a PDF into math actually help an AI find a fact better than, like, a standard keyword search?
Think of an embedding model like a highly intuitive librarian.
Okay, a librarian.
Right, but a librarian who doesn't just alphabetize books. They physically place them in a massive, multidimensional room based on their underlying meaning.
Oh, that makes sense.
So if a user asks a question about canine health, the system doesn't just look for the exact word canine. It immediately looks in the geographic area of the room where concepts like dog, puppy, and veterinarian are clustered together.
Because it understands the semantic relationship.
Exactly. But if you have bad chunking, meaning the system cuts a document in half right in the middle of a crucial paragraph, or if you use an outdated embedding model, the librarian gets confused.
The facts just get lost.
The critical facts are simply never retrieved. And if the right data isn't retrieved, the agent will inevitably hallucinate.
But let me push back on that whole process for a second. We keep hearing about these massive new context windows from the big AI labs.
Millions of tokens.
Right, millions. Why can't a company just bypass all this vector math, take every single PDF, every HR policy, every technical manual they own, dump it all into the prompt at once, and just let the AI sort out what's relevant? I mean, these models are smart enough to read a whole library in seconds now.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you are describing a data governance nightmare. Masquerading as a technical shortcut.
A nightmare.
Oh, totally. The playbook explicitly warns against this. It calls it the risk of stale context errors.
How does context go stale if everything is just in there?
Because enterprise data contradicts itself over time.
Oh, I see.
Imagine you dump 5 years of historical HR policies into that massive context window. You have the 2022 remote work policy, the updated 2024 policy, and the brand new 2026 policy.
They're all mixed together.
Exactly. If you just dump them all in without incredibly rigorous metadata, without tagging exactly which document supersede in another, and without strip data lifecycle management, the AI is going to scan that massive pile of text, latch onto the 2022 policy, and confidently tell a new employee they can work from anywhere in the world.
Wow. And the AI isn't technically hallucinating the text?
No. It is accurately retrieving a fact, but it is serving a superseded rule. That is not a glitch in the AI model. That is a fundamental failure of human data governance.
It's garbage in, confidently wrong garbage out.
Precisely.
And this reality, the immense friction of trying to make these complex systems actually work safely in an enterprise environment, explains why so many of these initiatives just die on the vine.
They stall out constantly.
The playbook notes that enterprise AI projects frequently stall out somewhere between month 4 and month 9. The initial pilot was a huge success. The executives clapped in the boardroom, but then nothing ships to production. The project just quietly drifts into irrelevance. Why is that specific time frame so deadly?
It happens because teams fall victim to what the playbook calls demo-driven development.
Demo-driven development.
Yes. They optimize the system for the parlor trick that looks impressive in a controlled setting. But to survive the transition to a production environment, you have to pivot entirely to evil-driven development.
Oh, okay.
And that requires confronting evil avoidance.
Evil avoidance. It sounds like a psychological complex.
It practically is a behavioral anti-pattern in engineering. Developers historically dislike building evaluation infrastructure because it is tedious, unglamorous work.
It's not the fun AI stuff.
Right. But the playbook is adamant.
Huh?
Evil-driven development is non-negotiable. You cannot safely ship an enterprise agent without a comprehensive golden data set.
Wait, so if I'm an engineering manager, how do I actually build a golden data set? Are we talking about millions of rows of data that require a massive team? Or is this something different?
It doesn't require millions of rows at all. A golden data set is typically a highly curated list of 100 to 300 very specific, very challenging questions.
Well, that's manageable.
Yeah. It includes the exact right answers, the specific documents those answers must be pulled from, and crucially, a subset of trick questions that the system should explicitly refuse to answer.
Going back to the refusal recall.
Exactly. And the ironclad rule is this. Absolutely no prompt changes, no code adjustments, and no model upgrades go into the production environment unless they are run against this golden data set and the aggregate score actually improves.
That makes perfect sense. Without that baseline, you're just guessing if a change made the system better or worse.
You're flying blind.
Yeah. And when a project is drifting, when it's failing to make it out of that month 4 to 9 purgatory, the project manager really has to step in and save it.
We do.
The playbook outlines the 3 planes of recovery to get a project back on track, and it stresses that the sequencing of these planes is absolutely critical.
The 3 planes are planning, ingestion, and inference.
Break those down for us.
Planning is defining the exact business metric you are trying to move. Ingestion is curating the data pipelines and the vector index we just discussed. And inference is the runtime layer tuning the props, adjusting the model routing, and managing the generation.
So what happens when a team gets the sequence wrong?
Total paralysis.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The most common mistake engineers make when a project is failing is that they immediately open up the code and start tweaking the props.
Which is the inference plane.
Right. They focus entirely on the inference plane because it feels productive. It feels like you're actively fixing the AI.
Yeah, you're changing the code.
But you cannot fix a stalled project by endlessly tweaking prompts at the inference plane if the source data at the ingestion plane is garbage.
Oh, wow.
You can have an engineer waste 3 weeks adjusting a prompt to make the AI find a specific clause in a contract, only to realize later that the page containing the clause was never successfully ingested into the database in the first place.
You're trying to fix a plumbing issue by painting the faucet.
Precisely. And you can't fix your data ingestion if your overall planning, your actual defined business goal, is vague.
Sequence matters.
You have to recover the project in exact order. Define the concrete business goal, clean and curate the underlying data, and only then do you tune the model.
Okay, so let's say I'm the project manager. I've done the hard, unglamorous work. I've sequenced the recovery. I've built the golden data set and controlled the latency tail.
Oh, what?
How do I translate all of this vector math, refusal recall metrics, and P99 charts to the board of directors? Because they certainly don't care about chunking strategies.
We absolutely do not. And presenting technical weeds to a board is a fast track to losing your funding.
Right.
The playbook offers a masterclass in executive communication.
Yeah.
The 3-slide briefing.
3 slides, that's it.
That is the maximum you're allowed. Slide 1 is the business outcome. What specific financial or operational metric are we moving?
Got it.
Slide 2 is the risk posture. What is our quantified residual risk? You do not say the system is safe.
You don't.
No. You say, based on our golden data set, we expect 3 format errors per 10,000 queries, and here is the human in the loop process that catches them.
So you own the errors.
Exactly. And slide 3 is the operating model. Who owns the system long term? And who is on the hook when it breaks at 2 a.m.?
It's ruthless, but it's exactly the level of clarity they need to approve a deployment. So, to bring all of this together, deploying an agentic enterprise system is clearly not just a technology problem you can solve by renting a smarter model.
Definitely not.
It is fundamentally an operating model problem. It requires ruthless hop production to keep the speed viable. It requires designing the architecture for that P99 tail latency, so your worst case scenario isn't a customer disaster.
Absolutely.
It means building those golden evaluation sets so you actually know if your updates are working. And above all, it means doing the hard work of context engineering to teach your AI the most important lesson of all, how to confidently say, I don't know.
That operational rigor is the foundation of trust. Without it, you don't have an enterprise tool. You just have a very expensive, unpredictable parlor trick.
So, what does this all mean for you? Whether you are the executive signing the massive check for an AI initiative or the developer in the trenches trying to build the system, you really have to look past the magic of that initial pilot demo.
You have to.
When a vendor shows you a slick, fast AI agent, ask them about their latency tail. Demand to see the golden evil dataset they use to test it. And look deeply at those refusal recall metrics. If they can't provide them, they aren't ready for your production environment.
The rigor of the underlying process is the only true guarantee of the final product.
Before I go, I want to leave you with one final, slightly provocative thought from the very end of the playbook.
Oh, this is a good one.
It notes a fascinating shift in user behavior. In the enterprise, users overwhelmingly prefer terse, highly accurate, almost robotic answers over expansive, conversational, chatty ones.
People just want the answer.
Right. If the ultimate goal of an enterprise AI agent is speed and precision, and all that conversational fluff just adds processing latency and increases the mathematical risk of hallucination, does the chat interface itself have an expiration date?
It's a great question.
Will we soon stop treating AI as a conversational partner and instead interact with it purely as a silent, high-speed cognitive utility running in the background of our traditional software? It really makes you wonder. Maybe the real trick isn't pulling the rabbit out of the hat. Maybe it's realizing we never needed the hat to begin with.
A very compelling question to leave us with.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.